Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on December 19th, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Hi, I'm Bruce Goldstein of Film Forum, repertory director. I want you to know my last name has significance in Philip Kaufman's career. Okay. We've done this before. Our first Skype was Norman Lloyd. It was 100 years old. It was after its screening. What? No, not William Friedkin. William Friedkin was a high school mate of Philip Kaufman's. I just read that.
Peter? Is he online for Skype? Okay.
Okay.
There we go.
Here he is, the director of The Wanderers, The Right Stuff, The Unbearable Light. Oh, no, that's me. There he is, Philip Kaufman.
Oh, there you are.
Could you kill the spot on the screen, Raymond? There you go. Boy, you're big as life there, Phil. Could you get rid of the menu here? Oh, you were?
Are we coming through?
Last week, we had five guys from Staten Island wearing them. They're hot on eBay. Well, I've never met you, Phil. It's a great thrill. You said we had met in San Francisco, but it's a great thrill for me. We've shown many of your movies here. I'm also thrilled because of the title of your first movie, Goldstein.
Yeah,
that's. Thank you. I was 13 years old. So, Phil, even though you're wearing a Wanderers jacket, you're not from the Bronx originally. You're from where?
I'm from Chicago.
But this is your era.
Yeah, actually, I'm a couple years older than that, but more or less, you know, and I grew up in, you know, going to Senn High School in Chicago, where virtually every kid wore jackets like this, and, you know, it sort of had the same feeling of, you know, sort of the beginning of the Elvis era, but when I read Richard, or through my son Peter, got a hold of Richard Price's book, Rose and I identified immediately with the time, the place, the music, and everything. We decided we had to do a movie of this, and it took years to get it made.
And you weren't the first people interested. We had Richard Price here 2 weeks ago. He said he first went to Sam Goldwyn, or Sam Goldwyn Jr. had it first, and there was a lot of turnaround over the years. Would you call it development hell?
I'm sorry, development hell. Well, it was not even, you know, developed by people. We bought an option. We wrote it. We took it around. Bill Graham was interested at one point in making it. Alberto Grimaldi, who was at that point the biggest producer in the world, he'd done all the spaghetti westerns, Fellini, Bertolucci, and all the films had been released by United Artists. But United Artists, when they looked at this movie with us and Grimaldi, they said, there's no future in teenage movies. They just didn't believe way back then that teenage movies, graffiti had just been out. So there was some precedence, but they just turned us down. So it took a while when we finally set up Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Then sort of on the back of that deal, we were able to set up The Wanderers. Then we had to wait a while to do The Wanderers. And in that interim, I guess people got wind of the idea that there might be what they called a gang movie, thing coming out. So a few other movies got into production while we were finishing Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And as you may or may not know, there was violence in theaters when some other films were released, and I think some people died. And so The Wanderers was sort of relegated to hell, really. I think it was released initially in two theaters and 17 drive-ins. It made its way around, various places. In Europe, it was a big hit. Eventually got onto television. I think Bravo Channel was the highest rated movie for a while there, but it you know, it's great, Bruce, that you're showing this movie now. It's been 37 years, and I've had this jacket in storage all that time.
You got it out just for tonight. I see your son, Peter, lurking in the background. Is that Peter? By the way, here I am. Hello. Yeah. Peter, it was Peter, you read the book when you were 14.
Yes, Bruce.
Well, it's a dirty book at 14. Actually, the movie is, the book is a lot raunchier than the movie turned out to be. Was that had to do with the rating system?
Yeah, well, it's maybe something to do with that. There were some trims, as you know, there was a longer version that I think will be coming out with the, when Kino Lorber releases the Blu-ray, that has some things added to that. But, you know, Rose and I had a sort of combine all of Richard Price's stories into one through line to make one story of. So some stuff fell off along the way, maybe. But as people in the audience, I wish I could see the audience.
Oh, we'll try to show you the audience. Can we? Can they see the audience?
On my screen.
Wait a minute. Where's the camera? Oh, we have to turn the lights up. By the way, Peter is a producer and director yourself, correct? Oh, wait a minute. That was his. We lost you. Just tell them. We'll get you back. There you are. Can they see the audience?
Well, Peter produces, you know, now all of my films. He, you know, has been sole producer on a number of films, Henry in June or Once in Paris. And then sometimes if we do co-productions, Peter's a co-producer with other producers. But we work together every day, and this room's in my house. It's in San Francisco, in freezing San Francisco.
Not as freezing it is as it is here.
Quite, but I had to chop snow off, or not snow, but frost off my car this morning. So, you know, it's San Francisco, man. anyway, yeah, so we're together all the time, and we talk about movies all the time, as we've done for years and years and years, ever since Peter, I think it was 14, when he suggested The Wanderers, and I thought the kid had a future.
You wrote the screenplay with your late wife, Rose, and how challenging was it to adapt Richard Price's book, which was essentially a series of short stories?
Yeah. Well, that was a challenge. We essentially, you know, we sort of didn't do anything. I think it took about a year doing that. We at one point flew to New York. I don't know if we were free production at that point, but we did meet with Richard Price, and we went on a tour of Bronx and Arthur Avenue, and you know, all the places he grew up, and you know, so. But it was a chore doing it, and the audience may have recognized Richard in the film in the bowling alley. He's one of the two hucksters who were, you know, taking out the folding money. Who the Galazzo brothers close in on there. But you know, Richard, you know, collaborated on the movie a lot with us. Suggested all his favorite songs. Sent me all.
It's one of the greatest playlists in movie history, by the way. I think everybody agrees with that here. Can they not see us? There's no camera. Can you see me? We should be...
All we're seeing is a logo of some reels here. Is there maybe someone could tell us? Should we press this thing here?
No,
wait a minute. What? Peter, you're the producer. The camera is not on. Oh, okay. There we go. I was okay. Here I am. All right. There we go. Okay. Now I don't know if you can see the audience. I don't think. Could everybody raise your hand? Okay. Just cheer. Okay. All right. Raymond, can we get rid of this menu business on the bottom? Get rid of that stuff. We want a full CinemaScope image here. Okay. Or 185. Yeah, with a professional theater here. if anyone would like to ask Phil a question, please, no, you got to walk up here and address the laptop is the way we do it. Okay. There we go. And tell us who you are and what you do. No, you don't have to tell us what you do. Okay. Well, if you want to, right? Okay.
Oh, shoot.
I thought we rehearsed this, Jeff.
I was trying to get rid of this thing.
What are you doing?
By the way, one of our Skypes, Phil, was a high school mate of yours, Billy Friedkin. You went to high school with him.
Well, I went to grammar school and high school.
Really?
Of course, he's a couple years older than I am, but we played basketball together. We're out of the same neighborhood exactly. Hung out in the same community center growing up.
But you don't live in a castle like he does now. Okay, here's your first question from the audience.
Mr. Kaufman, Gerson Vargas from New York City, a pleasure, fan of your work. I'm just wondering, of the movie, what is your favorite scene, and what is your favorite performance? I know it's a great cast, so many people who went on to become stars, but what is your favorite scene, and who is your favorite performer from the many performers in the movie?
Yeah, you know, it's such an ensemble piece. Virtually all of them, the young kids were unknown. There were, I think, three people with acting experience. Two, off-Broadway actors, Tony Kalem and Alan Rosenberg, and John Friedrich, who plays Joey, had some experience. All the other guys were non-professionals. And that, I really couldn't say who my favorite actor of all those kids was. I loved them all. We had the greatest time. And my award goes to the ensemble. And the best scene, I don't know. There's a whole series of, so the film is sort of constructed, aiming at going to one scene after another with certain links in between, but I had just come off finishing Invasion of the Body Snatchers and with Michael Chapman, great cinematographer.
Who did this? Who did The Wanderers as well?
He did The Wanderers, yeah. Right, and Raging Bull, many Scorsese movies and so forth. And when it came to Donkey Boy Country, we were sort of still under the thrall of the pods and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And for us, it had a certain similar kind of feeling of Earth aliens. And we sort of did some of that same kind of lighting that we had just done in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So I loved all of Ducky Boy Country. It was a low-budget movie. We didn't have a lot of time to shoot. The whole football thing, I don't know, with the fight and everything, I've forgotten 3 or 4 days. But when you make films, another scene of mine that was a favorite was the strip poker scene. And those of you who know how complex that is to shoot around a table with all the reactions, looking at one person, looking at another, that took 2 days. When you compare a small scene like that to the big football scene, it's part of the mysteries of making movies.
Another question over here.
Hi. First of all, thank you for making the movie. I've been to every screening of it at Film Forum the past couple weeks, and I just can't get enough of it. I wanted to ask you about the Kennedy assassination. And using that as the moment of Richie and his girlfriend's reconciliation, I was wondering if you could speak to that decision and sort of what the Kennedy assassination meant for their relationship.
Okay, well, that's a great question, because the book was actually set in 1962. For me and Rose, of course, the Kennedy thing was sort of, the end of an era, the beginning of a new era. And when I was shooting my first film, named after Bruce Goldstein, it was 63, and we were come out from lunch. We had a small crew, I don't know, cameras, two camera people, one sound. We were on Michigan Boulevard in Chicago, and suddenly people started walking toward us, weeping, and we couldn't find out. It was a mystery as to what was going on, and we looked into a television store, very much like the store that they look into, where all these screens were, and there we saw the Kennedy, you know, the after effects of the Kennedy assassination, and so it just, I don't know, it was just something to slide it to that year, and of course, that was right at the time when Bob Dylan was singing at Gertie's Folk City, and, you know, another thing about changing of an era and so forth, and we actually shot at Dylan. St. Dylan had been was a friend of mine back then, and that was Gertie's Folk City that we shot through the window there. And, you know, he and I had worked on a project, and I was fortunate enough to have him let me use that song, Times They Ever Change. But that was essentially, you know, it was a pivotal year in American history. And I'm very moved, by the way, Rich and Ken Wall moves away from the Dylan song and sort of Boston the Crowd as he goes back into the past, really, to become a Galasso brother, grow into that Hawaiian shirt.
It's an incredible cast. Ken Wall's first picture, a very early film for Karen Allen, for Linda Manns. Tony Gannios had never acted, but I have to say, I think my favorite performance is the actress who plays Despy, Toni Kallam. And the reason I'm saying that is because she's right over there. Toni Kallam is right. Despy, she's fantastic. Now you can put the spot on Raymond.
Tony's one of the great actors.
There she is, Toni Kallam. And you don't. Well, how come you haven't changed at all?
Yeah, 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 right.
Yeah, there you go.
So how do I see you, Phil?
Right here. Look right there. There she is.
Hi, yeah. Phil.
Where are you?
There she is. No. You don't see her?
Can't see her. It's sort of frozen screen there.
Well, yeah. She's okay. Okay, now you can kill the spot, Raymond, over here.
Oh man, Tony, I want to see you.
We'll
I
Skype
think
you.
I'm coming to San Francisco tomorrow. I've decided.
Oh, now you see her. Okay.
Oh man, Tony, come here, Tony. Oh man,
we touched
you.
Oh boy. Oh God.
I haven't seen you in a while. We talk from time to time, but it's what a pleasure it was, as you know, as I tell you every time, to work with you. You were such a joy. You were so great for all the other kids to work with because you brought the highest level of professionalism and fun to them all. You really helped the entire set and cast, and I love you.
And I love you. And as I tell you every time I talk to you, it only went downhill from here.
But this movie is very colored
no,
your
I
whole
mean,
career. No?
No, I mean, once you work with a filmmaker, a director like Phil, nobody else compares. As I've told Phil, it's like having a great first lover and then thinking everybody else is going to be like that, and they are not. And so... nobody else measured up to working with Phil. Nobody.
Oh, man. Well, you know, as I started to say, you know, it's great. It's been 37 years, and I want to see you before then. But in another 37 years, Bruce, could you show this movie again? And we'll all get to
it. If you come to New York, we'll show it tomorrow. You know, anytime. Let's have we had Tony Gannios and Karen Allen here. By the way, two Sundays ago, I did a Karen Allen Phil Kaufman double because we showed Raiders for the kids' matinee, and Karen showed up as a surprise guest, and then we did a panel with Tony Kallam, Tony Gannios, and Karen Allen, and the following day, Richard Price came. He first right. and he saw it for the first time in 36
wow.
years, and he still liked it. He said,
"Yeah, that's yeah. great."
So we'll show it anytime, Phil.
All right, okay, Bruce. So we really appreciate that. And
by the
Jonathan Hertzberg is there or something.
He is Jonathan Hertzberg from Kino Lorber over there, and it looks fantastic. By the way, I don't think it ever looked this good before. Would you agree, Tony?
I just think every time I see this film, I see more in it, Phil. I mean, it just, whoever said they came to every screening, I totally get it. I mean, every time I see this film, I see more. The layers in this are just endless. And the music is brilliant. It's just a brilliant piece of filmmaking.
That's great. Well, it's sort of, you know, for some people, sort of a dumb high school movie, but it's not meant to be that. Of course, you know, coming from Richard Price, it couldn't be that. But, you know, Bruce, we had a screening in San Francisco at the Alamo Draft House 2 days after the election, and everybody was really depressed. And the Telluride Film Festival, Tom Luddy and all the people at Telluride sponsored the screening, and it was in a big theater. What was great was everyone's mood was so good. Everyone came in depressed and went out exhilarated. And there were a lot of, you know, the Telluride Wonders. As you know, there's a big fan club in Telluride, and it's been there for 32 years. They all wear their jackets. You know, guys came with these jackets like me, with white beards and long hair, and they've been wanderers forever, and forever keeps going.
Do you get a piece of that, those jackets? Uh-huh. You should.
Do you have to be a guy to get a jacket, Phil, or do girls get them?
You can be a ducky girl.
Sleep with Richie.
We have another surprise guest, Phil. Go ahead. I was about to say we have another surprise guest. She wrote a book about you. You know who that is?
Man.
Annette Insdorf, Professor Annette Insdorf from Columbia University.
Hi, Annette.
Hello, Phil. Surprise.
I can't see you, though. There's
okay.
Tony.
Right there.
Should
right
I just,
there.
Right here, can you see me now? Well, anyway, I came back to see this film for the nth time because I'm actually taping a commentary for the Blu-ray on Wednesday. And it occurred to me that I should have this film as fresh in my mind as possible and get to hear you. And hi, Peter. I see you in the background. And Mark's here too. My husband Mark is over there. And we had such a great time watching this yet again, except I was taking notes furiously to make sure that I would be articulate for Wednesday's taping. So I'm just here to say, wow, I love this, and congratulations yet again.
We could have given you a screener, but that's okay.
I have a screener.
Okay.
I wanted to be here and see and hear the audience and feel the whole thing.
You have to breathe the atmosphere of an audience. I know.
Exactly.
We don't do that enough. This film, I think, is meant to play to an audience.
Oh, yeah.
I hope. Yeah.
Well,
anyway. We hope.
I'm going to let other people ask questions.
Any other questions from the audience? Your last chance. How did it do initially, Phil, at the box office? Now, Richard Price, before you answer that, Richard Price claims that it opened the same day as The Warriors. That was the controversial one that was causing the violence in the theaters.
No, opened it after The Warriors. We were shot at the same time. Walter Hill was a friend of mine, but somehow that film came into being very quickly while I was finishing Body Snatchers, and I was going flying back and forth from San Francisco to New York to cast The Wanderers. Scott Rudin was our casting director.
Right.
18 years old at the time, and the film shot pretty much at the same time, but that film got rushed into release. There was violence. There was a film called Ballpark Nights. I remember Rosenthal walking on the street and seeing the headlines, gang movie causes murders in theaters, and we got, if I can say the word, Wanderers got fucked.
But it found an audience later, would you say?
popped an audience and built all over the world, you know, and as I say, at Telluride, when we went up to Telluride, I went up with Jean-Claude Carrière. We were working on a Unbearable Lightness of Being together, and we visited Telluride, and we got to the main square at Telluride, and suddenly 30 or more people wearing these jackets came running out, totally surprised us, surrounded us, calling me and Rose mom and dad. They knew every line from the movie, and this was 32 years ago. They were wanderers, and it had that kind of life. It was a subterranean, it had a subterranean existence. And then they show it almost every year at Telluride. One year I was there, they were, showed it outside against the mountains. You know, it's about a mile high up there. Annette goes all the time. She, one of their main commentators, panelists, that runs panels there. And I sat next to Zhang Yimou, and everyone was singing the song, and I sort of muttered to him, "Don't fuck with the Wongs." And I think he
Richard Price claimed that Walter Hill stole the Baldies from you, that he saw an early cut.
Is it? Well, we won't get into
that. Okay. Anybody else have a question from the audience? Come on up. Did you encounter the real gang members while you were filming in Van Cortlandt Park or up there? Were there really Ducky Boys and Baldies and...
Well, yeah, you know...
Wongs.
Well, a lot of that was, of course, taken out of there. There's a picture I'm getting now. Yeah, there was a lot of that was, you know, taken out of Richard Price's historical memories and so forth. But and there is a recent book on Ducky Boys from somebody who claims to be a huge fan of the book and so forth. But we met with an old Fordham Bald. This guy was a real. Kind of as I was a small tough guy, as I like to say, he was a masculine Rudy Giuliani. And
a what? Did you say a masculine Rudy Giuliani?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay. Okay, I'll buy that.
He told us some stories of what the Baldies did, how terribly vile they were. And at one point, this guy was on the set, and he was saying something, and Rose was someone never to back down from a discussion. And in her, the most civil way she could say it, she told him to go fuck himself. And the guy was going to, you know, he got all huffy and was going to hit Rose, being the guy that he was. And Ken Wall came running over, and, you know, these... Ken Wall's a big guy, much big, towered over this guy, and the guy backed down. But he was like a monster. He'd been a real gang member. So, and then there was we were shooting on Fordham Road, a motorcycle, a contemporary motorcycle gang that came of Fort Beacon gang, and they sort of pushed their way through the crowd, stopped their motorcycle. And then they bumped into our Fordham Baldies, and they had to look up. I mean, Terror was 6'7" and weighed 455 pounds, and they were terrified. They just sort of said, "Hey, man, how are you?" And they backed out through the crowd, started bikes, went away. So, you know, but a lot of people who were around there at the time remember talked about the gangs.
Have a question?
Hi,
address
Philip. My name's William from New York. I wondered, was it difficult to get the rights to the music? Because that's, you know, Dion, obviously. He was a huge star.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. At the time, people weren't doing it that much. No, you know, Graffiti had done music, but somehow people negotiated it, and we were able to, for a reasonable amount of money, get the rights to those songs. You know, in later years, it became outrageously expensive.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
And Dylan, I don't even remember what we had to pay Dylan. I don't know. It was just great that you know, I contacted him, and he said, yeah, go ahead and use it, which he never used it.
Didn't Dylan want to actually play himself in that? That's what another Richard Price story, I might add.
I don't know about that. Shooting the movie, I think we went with Karen Allen and Alan Rosenberg, who plays Turkey. You know, Alan Rosenberg became head of the Screen Actors Guild. Turkey became head of the Screen Actors Guild. And we went to see a Dylan concert during the shooting, but I don't remember Dylan wanting to play Richie or whatever. No.
The ending of the movie is purely your invention, yours and Rosa, I'm guessing. Am I right? They're in the Bronx. He turns the corner, and he's on West 3rd Street in the Village at Gerd's Folk City. How'd you come up with that ending?
Well, no. They're in Little Italy, actually.
Oh, they are Little Italy, yeah.
It was in that neighborhood. It's, you know, we might have cheated it a block or two, but it was from, well, I've forgotten the name of that restaurant where Terry Perry, the woman who sings the song was actually the singer in that restaurant. And so, you know, she became a character in her restaurant where she performed. And two blocks away was Gertie's Folk City.
Oh, really? So it was Little Italy closer to here where we are right now on Houston Street.
Yeah.
Not far. Gertie's was on West 3rd Street. It was originally on 4th Street. Well, folks, that's another evening. Okay, Folk City. Well, thank you, Phil, so much for being here. And Peter, thanks for all your help in setting this up and in reading the book when you were 14. We appreciate that.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
And please.
Wanderers forever.
Hey, and let us know when you're in New York, and we'll set up another Wanderers reunion. Okay. Thanks again. And thanks to Tony Callum and Annette Insdorf, too.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to the Moving Image Incorporated.